We are up to Lamed Hey Amud Beis. Mishnah told us, Chotruma Tameya Psula. Right, so let's just chazer a little bit in our minds. The Mishnah was all about various psulim of Esrogim. One of the things we had really focused on was if the Esrog is inedible. Everyone seems to think that not inedible, you can't eat it because it's no good. No, inedible in terms of halacha, you're not allowed to eat it. So that would be a problem. And then the discussion became, well, what if you can eat it, but it's not considered to be yours? Does that make a difference? And that was a machlekes. Does it also have to be yours in the traditional sense? So now the Gemara gets involved with Truma Tmeya Psula, which we had mentioned before. So the Gemara just refreshes our memory. Lesba heter achila. You're not allowed to use an esrog that's Truma Tmeya. Because what happens in Truma Tmeya, you have to give it to the Kayin, but he's not allowed to eat it, he's going to have to burn it. So even though it's Mutter Behana to the Kayin, the Kayin's allowed to use it as fuel for his fire to cook other things, it's not Aser Behana, but it is Aser Bechila, and therefore you're not allowed to use it for an Esreg. V'shal Truma Tahor L'Yitol. And the Mishnah told us, but if it's Truma that's Tahor, so you're not allowed to use it L'Chachila, but you're Yotze B'Dievet. So they're going to quote to Machlekes about this. Pligibur Riyami Riyasi. Riyami Riyasi had another Machlekes. Chad Omar, Bimnei Shemach Shira. Chad Omar, Bimnei Shemach Sida. Mipnei means because. Shemach Shira. So in other words, we'll explain this all in one second. The question is, what in the world is their problem if it's Truma that's Tor? Well, if you're not a Kohen, you can't eat it, but he can. So why should that be a problem? So nobody says that's the problem. Nobody says because it's Truma and you're not a Kohen, you're not allowed to use it. Everyone assumes that is considered to be edible. You can give it to the Kohen and he'll eat it. That's not a problem. So what in the world is a problem? Why shouldn't it be good l'chadchila? So the machlokes is, one of them says, because you're machshir it, v'chadamar, because you're causing it to be lost. So either one of these, what do these mean? So does anybody want to take a stab at this? What it means, machshira?
What's where the kasher?
Right, so kasher is the shoresh. To be machshir something,
what's the source where you get it from?
Is causative. To be machshir means to make it kosher.
So it can get tumah?
Exactly. That's relevant in the areas of tumah v'tahara. There is an ancient halacha that when you wash your vegetables, fruits, any of those things, so they're susceptible to tumah. Once they grow, when they grow, and they haven't been harvested yet, and they get rainwater on them, obviously, because that's how they grow, that's not an issue at all. Now that they've been harvested, if they become rinsed off, even though you didn't necessarily do it yourself, you know, it rained, but you say to yourself, oh, Baruch Hashem, it's going to wash off the fruit. So if you say that, if that's what you have in mind, then even though you didn't do it actively, that is good enough to make it wet, and now it becomes susceptible to tumah. Is it tameh? No, it didn't come in contact with tumah, but it's insusceptible to tumah until it's been rinsed. It's impervious to tumah. But now it's been huchshar. That's the terminology. It's been huchshar. L'kabel tumah. So one opinion says that when you take your esrog and it's truma tahora, it's truma, but it's tahor, you bring it into contact with your lulav. Nowadays, we don't do this anymore. So if the Gemara is written today, I don't know that this would be an issue. But in those days, they would always put their lulavim and their other minim, and maybe that really would be the problem even today. They would put them in water. Does anybody here keep anything in water? No. I mean, one of the Arba Minim.
Oh.
Hadassim, Aravos.
Yeah, usually I take the Aravos and wrap it in like a towel.
Right. And wipe it like the moisture.
Right.
Yeah.
And you put it in the fridge?
Yeah. It doesn't seem to like the orange. But yeah.
Oh, I think it is great. Aravos, you can tell the difference really, majorly.
Really? Because my Aravos really holds that. We're totally dry.
Really?
Yeah.
See, there used to be an old minig that people would always buy one new Arava every day. So nowadays, you can put them in the refrigerator and they stay really, really nicely. So I don't know what's going on here. Maybe it's too wet. Do you re-wet it every day?
I don't know.
Yeah, you don't want to.
You can't re-wet it. You have to wet it once in the beginning and then leave it to be a little bit moist, and then every day you just stick it back into the fridge. You take the last one that was out.
Sometimes if you mess up, you can just do it again.
Yeah, you just got to be careful. If it gets too wet, it makes them fall off. But in any case, so some of the minim, even bizman hazeh, may be wet. And if that wetness gets on your esrig and that is good for you because it cleans it off or whatever, so then that would be machshir, your esrig lekabel tuma. So what? Well, there's another step here that the Gemara didn't spell out. There's nothing wrong with being machshir something lekabel tuma. The problem is that once it becomes hochshir lekabel tuma, now you could end up making it truma tameya. So it's a step, at least a risk, in a negative direction. Because we do have halacha that you're supposed to keep your truma tahor. You're supposed to do whatever you can to make sure that it doesn't become tameh. So the Gemara says, well, one opinion is you're not allowed to make it wet because it becomes hukshar lekabel tumah, and then it might become tameh, and that would be a problem. So you see how this is a little bit removed, which is why there's machlokas about this. Not everybody holds that this is the problem or a problem. So one opinion is that because when you bring the esrog into the proximity, into the contact with something wet, it's going to be machshir, your esrog, lekabel tumah, and it's truma, so that's a dangerous game that you're playing with your esrog, and therefore you're not allowed to do it lechachila. B'di'eved, of course you're yote, but it's not unless you actually made it tame. But assuming that you're careful about your hands and whatnot, so then it remains tahor, it's just hukshar lekabel tumah. Now, I will have you know, at the Seder night, we have this thing called karpas. What do we do before we dip the karpas in salt water? Kadesh. Urchatz. Karpas yachatz. And everybody wants to know why we're having karpas at the Seder. And what's the answer? So the children will ask. That is the official answer. So the children will say, what's going on over here? That's weird. Think about it for a minute. Every kid has never been to a Seder. That's the assumption. I'm talking about a kid that didn't sit there for the last 3 months taking notes and making projects about the Seder. Doesn't know what's going to happen. What?
What does the father answer?
That's a great question. The Magen Avraham has an answer to this, and others say, no, that's the point, just to pique his curiosity. But I just want to explain the curiosity for a second. Every kid that comes to the table has been through Shabbos and Yom Tov before. And he knows the basic gist. What happens first? You come to the table. Sometimes he's in Shalom Aleichem, sometimes you don't. But what's the first thing you do? What's the first mitzvah of every night, Shabbos or Yom Tov? What do? You make Kiddush. And that's what happens at the Seder night. And then what happens next? Everybody goes and they wash their hands, which is the same on Seder night.
No bracha.
That's going to be different. And then you sit down at the table, and what is the kid expecting? Well, we got these three matzahs on the table, and I'm hungry. Let's eat. And instead, they pass around some karpas, whatever you use. Some people use parsley. Parsley can be buggy. You got to be careful. Celery, potatoes. Some people have a minig because their families are from those places in Europe that they didn't have vegetables, so they ate potatoes. But whatever. So
they eat a raw potato?
Cooked. And the kid says, what are you guys doing? Can we have the matzah, please? And they say, no, karpas. Well, then why did we wash? So what's the answer? Because we're dipping a vegetable in a liquid. So what happens to that vegetable when it gets dipped in liquid? It's hukshar lekabel tumah. Now it's able to become tameh because we washed it off, we rinsed it, and we dipped it. So because of that, it's now susceptible to tumah. If your hands have not been washed, then what may be a problem? Your hands might be tameh, in which case you will make the food tameh. Does anybody care?
No.
Well, bizman hazeh, no. Because there's no such issue of tumah v'tahara bizman hazeh. We don't really care. But if it's truma, in the times of the Kohanim, times of the Hamikdash, that would be huge. You're not allowed to be metameh your truma. And there were always those tzaddikim that always ate everything b'tahara. They were always careful to not make their food tummy. So, the truth of the matter is, in the zman of the Beis HaMikdash, so this might have been something, this was something that everybody would be makbid on. They were in Yerushalayim, they were bring in a korban Pesach, you know, and they were going to be careful about tumah v'tahara. So because they're going to be dipping their vegetables, so what do they have to do first?
Wash
their hands. Now we do that without a bracha because it's not a technical takana. It's just an itza tova. It's just a good idea. So we don't make a bracha on that washing. What about bizman hazeh? What about nowadays? We don't care about tumah v'tahara. Is there an inyan to wash your hands before you dip something in a liquid? So this is a machlokes aposkim. Most people are not makpid on this. The minhag ha'olam is not to be makpid on this, but there certainly were those that said, yet you should. So if you're looking for a new chumrah, you can adopt this one. If you're not looking for a chumrah, that's fine. But just FYI, if this isn't inyan, the Vilna Gaon certainly held that bizman hazeh, we should still be doing this. And so you will definitely find people, even bizman hazeh, that when they're going to eat a pickle, and it's not dried off first, they're going to contact it with their hands when it's wet, or even with a fork when it's wet, so then they will actually wash until I say that. 1-2-1-2, you know? Not 1-1-1-1-1. They'll wash like they're washing for bread to remove the tumah from their hands before eating these things. So that's the first opinion, is that you're not allowed to use an esrog that's truma tahora because we're afraid that some of the minim will be wet, and now your esrog will be susceptible to tumah, and that is risky. The other opinion is mipnesha mafsida. Mipnesha mafsida. Anybody know what that means? It comes from the word hefsed. What's hefsed? Hefsed meruba. A loss. How are you being mafsid? How are you causing your esrog to be lost by using it? Because truma is, what's supposed to happen with truma, really? Truma only applies to what types of things? Food. What's the coin supposed to do with it?
Eat it.
So what happens if you ruin it and now it's inedible? So you've caused your truma to be lost. You've destroyed your truma. That's bad. You don't have to do that. So I think I told you the story that when Rav Aaron Rekeach, the Belzer Rebbe, when he escaped from Europe, he ended up in Hungary before he ended up eventually in Eretz Yisrael and restarted Hasidus in Tel Aviv. So when he was in Hungary, they had two esrogim for like the entire community. One they got for the Rebbe, and the other one was for, I forgot if it was for like the Beis Din, everyone was going to come. I forgot exactly the other one. But in any case, the Rebbe made an announcement that after he is Nota Lulav and Esreg on Sukkot, everyone's welcome to come and be Nota Lulav and Esreg. And they told him, Rebbe, are you sure you want to do that? So he said, of course. By the time everyone in town was finished at Esreg, the Esreg was black. And you've seen them turn brown from use. This one was so used by so many people that probably, you know, didn't necessarily shower so often. It was black. So the Rebbe took one look at that esrog and he said, now that's a mahudr dika esrog. It was physically very not beautiful, but in terms of what it accomplished, how everybody wanted to do it, and the entire community was able to be notal that esrog. So in the eyes of Shemayim, beauty is in the eyes of the beholder, as a very special, very beautiful esrog. So bat mipnei shem afsida, that you're not allowed to use lechatchila in esrog shel truma, because when you handle it, you make it mushy, you make it turn brown, you do all kinds of things that eventually will make it not appetizing to the kohen, and now you're mafsid the truma. Gemara says, who cares? My benayu, what's the difference? What's between them? At the end of the day, you're not allowed to use it. Is it really a nafkamina? What the reason is? Gemara says, kugoyin shekara le'ashem. A very unusual case. The esrog, remember, it has a very thick peel, right? So you can peel it off, and then the fruit's on the inside. You don't eat the peel anyway. So if a guy says, I am labeling this esrog truma, he's got an esrog orchard. So he has to be mafresh truma on his esrogim. So he's mafresh, but he says, I'm only designating the fruit of the esrog truma, not the peel. Not the rind. So the rind is technically not truma. What's the only part that's going to be affected by handling it? The peel, the rind. Is the fruit on the inside going to be affected by handling? Absolutely not. So then it's not a problem. L'chachila should be able to do it. But if, what's the other opinion? You're machshir l'kabel tuma. So if you're machshir the peel, you're machshir the whole thing to mekabel tuma. So it doesn't make a difference. Even though technically it's not truma on the peel, truma's not peel, but the whole thing becomes susceptible to tumah once the outside becomes wet. The man that rishim machshira ika. So according to the man, the amr that holds the problem is that your machshir to become tameh, so you still have the same reason. It's a problem. But if you're causing the loss to the esrig, you're not, because the fruit's on the inside, and that's the only part that's truma, not the rind. Then it doesn't apply. Okay, next. Im natal ksheira. But b'diavad, if a person took the truma esrig that was tohor, and he was noital with it, so it's still kitz kasher, as you would say. L'man d'amar mibnei she'ein b'heter achila. According to the person that said the problem of truma is when it's tameh anyway, is that you can't eat it. So in this case, when it's tahor, a kohen could eat it. You can if you're a Yisrael, but a kohen is allowed to eat it, so it's fine. And according to the person that said that the only problem for an esrog is when it doesn't have a din moment, it's not considered to be financially yours, so that would be a problem. No, in this case, it's truma tahara, so it does have a status of being yours, or at least belonging to the kohen at least. So in that case, it's totally fine. There's no problem whatsoever. It's only a lechachila out of a concern something's going to happen to it. But b'di'evet, certainly you're yotzei lechola deos. V'shel demai. What's demai again? Anybody remember?
Blood.
Demai.
What do you mean? Does it mean what or lie?
Hey, what is that? What's demai?
What or lie? I mean, you have to acquire.
Demai is an official category of produce.
Oh, isn't it when, like, you don't know whether or not it's supposed to go to Cohen?
Yes, basically. Yeah. In other words, the Amei Ha'aretz, the people that were not very knowledgeable Jews, they knew that you got to give Truma to the Kohen, and so you could assume that they separated Truma, because that was like a Chiyuv Misa V'Deshamayim, they didn't necessarily want to play games with it. But Maestros! Maeser to the Levi, Maeser Sheni, Rishalayim, Maeser Ani, that they did not necessarily separate from their produce. That was just a statistical fact of the time. So because of that, if you buy produce in the market, and you don't know if you're buying it from a Talmud Chacham, you don't know you're buying it from a person who really knows what he's doing, or is a Yari Shamayim, then you have to assume that these Trumas and Maestras were not necessarily taken. It's a suffix, though, because it could be he did. We just don't know. That's called Demai. Demai is an interesting creature. So you're not allowed to eat demai until you're mafresh what you need to be mafresh from it, right? Because it could be they were never separated. Does anybody know what you call produce that didn't have trumas and maestras separated from it? It starts with a test. Nope. Tevel. Tevel means it didn't have trumas and maestras separated from it. You're not allowed to eat tevel. It's aser. So demai is not really tevel because it could be that trumas and maestras were separated. It's a suffix. So because of that, we're choshesh for those that don't, and we treat it as if it's tevel, even though it's not exactly because it's a suffix. Right? You with me? That halacha, that you have to be choshesh, you have to be concerned that it's tevel, was a din derabanan. So that din derabanan did not apply to the poor. If a person was legitimately an ani, so Chazal didn't want to have to make him separate more food than necessary, since it's only a suffix, we don't want to make him separate his money if he doesn't need to, this is his food after all. So they said, aniyim are allowed to eat demai. Yeah? Okay, so now, if you are not poor, and you have produce that is demai, are you allowed to eat it?
No.
You're not, right? You have to be mafresh, trumas, and maestras, right? Only if you're an ani would you be allowed to eat it. But an ani is allowed to eat it. So it's a funny category, right? Is that like truma? You're not allowed to eat it, but the kohen is? Because you always feed it to the poor? So what did the Mishnah say about demai? Shel demai. Beishamai poislin ubeisil machshirin. Beisil, Shammai says, no way. Beis Hillel says it's fine. So what does the Gemara do with this? My taima de Beis Hillel. Why does Beis Hillel say that demai is fine, is lechachila, you can use an esrog shel demai? Kevan de iboi mafker lehula nichse. Since if he wants, he can be mafker. What is mafker? What's hefker? Ownerless. Since if he wants, he can make his esrog, himself. He can make himself ownerless. What? Since he can be mafkir his nechasim, What are nechasim?
Assets.
Yeah, okay, good. That's nice. What are his assets? His property. Since he can be mafkir his assets, v'haviani, and become just like that, poor. V'chazilei, and therefore it would even be fitting for him. In other words, it's a little bit strange here, right? Why didn't the Gemara just say, since any ani could eat it? So I'll leave that to you as a question. Question we need to answer. Why does the Gemara just say, because any ani can eat it? The Gemara doesn't. The Gemara says, he could eat it. He can't. He's not poor. Well, in a second, he can be mafkir everything he wants, and he'll be poor. I mean, nobody's going to do that. Nobody's going to do that, right? Nobody's going to do that. But I guess if you're really desperate, you're really desperate for an Esrig, which doesn't taste good. So then, but it's in his hands to be able to consume that fruit. He could if he wanted to. There's a mechanism that would allow for it. Yeah, but like that, you got to find someone to buy it. Here, to be mafkir, you're on your own.
You don't have to make everything ownerless. You can just sell one thing you have, buy it, and sort of immediately.
Who says someone's going to buy it? You can't make someone buy your stuff. You can be mafkir unilaterally. What I'm trying to say is, hefker's up to you.
You're forcing somebody to buy it.
Right. But then it's your stuff.
And then just buy it.
What? You want another one?
This water bottle.
Yeah.
Let's say this is what makes me not an ani.
Yeah.
So I can either just make this hefker.
Right.
Or I can sell it to you, if you have money.
Yes.
And then just buy it.
Correct.
And then the same thing would be accomplished. And I would still have more.
But you, it's not in your hands to sell something. Because you don't know you're going to find a buyer. It's up to somebody else's free will. But you can unilaterally be, no, I'm serious. You can unilaterally be mafkir something. It's important.
Why are you assuming no one's going to buy something?
Because it's not in your hands to do, that's all. It requires someone else.
You're taking your property then.
What?
What is this property consisting of?
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. The point is, he can do it on his own without anybody. Without, he has to have witnesses. Okay, they have to have two or three people that say, I have to hear him be mafkir. That's
my
true.
Is,
but he can do it on his own.
Why somebody would do that?
The point is, it's considered his because it's totally in his capacity to be able to eat it. That's the point. On his own, he could eat it if he wanted to. That's the point. And therefore, it's considered his, and it's not something that he can't eat. That's the point. As of now, he can't eat it. He's not an ani. But on his own, he can make himself into an ani, and therefore, it's something he could eat. That's how the Gemara looks at it. Hashtanami lachem karina bay. Because of that, even now, before he's mafkirit, it's considered to be his. This not, as we learned in the Mishnah, machilinus aniyam demai, you're allowed to feed the poor demai, ves achsanya demai. And a guest who's coming to your table and he has nothing there, he's just a guest, he's basically a poor person right now because he's depending on you, you could feed him demai as well. Ubei shamai, but Ubei shamai is when they said you're not allowed to use an esrog shel demai. So, how do they get around what we just said? Ani layachil demai. He disagrees with the whole principle and says that an ani is not allowed to eat demai. Pashut. That's it. Aniyam are not allowed. He denies that whole idea. He says aniyam are not allowed to eat demai. He does not observe in the Mishnah. Machlin aniyam demai is achsani demai. The Mishnah says you're allowed to feed poor people demai and guests demai. From Rav Huna, Tana Beishamai Amrim. But Rav Huna said that we learned that Beis Shammai says, "Ein ma'achilas aniyam es achsanim demai." You're simply not allowed to feed the poor or the guests demai. Beisolaimrim ma'achilas aniyam demai ves achsanoyim demai. Beisol holds you are allowed to feed the poor and the guests demai. Something which you bought from people that you don't know, separated from Musa Nisrus, the Ame Ha'aretz. The regular, normal people that we don't expect to be so knowledgeable about halach. So Ma'aser Sheni b'Yerushalayim. Ma'aser Sheni b'Yerushalayim is the same idea, l'chachila not, but b'diavad you're yotze. Again, Ma'aser Sheni, you are allowed to eat it, in Yerushalayim anyway. The only thing is, we have this little tricky machlokes, Rabbi Meir and Chachamim. Rabbi Meir was of the opinion that Ma'aser Sheni belongs to who? Anybody remember? or gavoya, it's considered maman gavoya, belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because you don't give Ma'aser Sheni to the Kohen. You bring it to Yerushalayim and you eat it. So is it yours? And Hashem said, I want you to eat it in Yerushalayim. And you have a mitzvah to bring it to Yerushalayim. But in terms of the object, it belongs to you. Whereas HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, mine. You come eat it in Yerushalayim, otherwise you don't have permission to eat it. So is it yours, but you have a mitzvah to go and eat in Yerushalayim? Or is it HaKadosh Baruch Hu's, and he gives you permission to eat his in Yerushalayim? So Rabbi Meir says, it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's, and Chachamim say, it's yours. So what's the problem if it's Ma'aser Sheni, and you're in Yerushalayim? Why would L'chatchila you not be allowed to use it? If the opinion is, according to the opinion, that Truma Tahora, which is very similar, right? Truma Tahora belongs to the Kohen, right? But he's not allowed to make it Tamei. So okay, there is a concern that if you bring the Ezra close to the other Minim and it gets wet, you're Machshir L'Kabel Tuma. Okay, it's the same thing here. If you hold that we're afraid you're going to be Machshir L'Kabel Tuma and end up making it Tamei. So same thing here, you're not allowed to make your Ma'aser Sheni Tamei. So, Laman, Dam Ramesh Machshira, according to the person that held by Truma Tahora, you're not allowed to use the Lechadchila because you're Machshirit Lekabel Tuma, Hari Machshira. So, behold, you are Machshirit Yemayser Sheini as well, and that is a parallel problem. Laman, Dam Ramesh Mafsida, Hari Mafsida. And according to the opinion that holds that you're causing it to be destroyed, so then here too, you're causing the Esrik to get brown, black, not appetizing. You're causing your Mayser Sheini to be lost, which again is very similar to Truma in that sense. You're not allowed to do that either. So either way, you're certainly Yotzei, but L'chadchila you're not allowed to do it. V'im not al k'sheira. So it quotes on the Mishnah, but if you did use your Esrig, then you, that's Ma'aser Sheni, you're still Yotzei. The Ma'adar Menesha ain't ba heter achila. According to the person that holds that the problem of the Esrig is if you can't eat it, it's pasul. But if you can eat it, then it's kasher. Divriyako. So then he would say everyone holds your Yotzei, because Ma'aser Sheni in Yerushalayim, you're allowed to eat it. So what's the problem? The only problem you have by an Esrig is if you can't eat it. You don't have to own it, though. You just have to be able to eat it. L'man dam l'fi shein, but din mamin. But according to the person that said that the problem of an Esrig is that if it doesn't belong to you, it doesn't have a halacha being mamin, let's say it's asar b'hana. So that's a problem. Ha money? Then whose opinion must this be? Rabbanan he. Then it's only the opinion of the Rabbanan, and not Rebbe Meir. In other words, the question the Gemara is asking is, whose opinion is our Mishnah? Because the Mishnah says that Ma'aser Sheni in Yerushalayim is only a problem L'chadchila, not B'diyavad. Wait a minute. But according to Rebbe Meir, Ma'aser Sheni is Mamun Gavoya. So since Ma'aser Sheni is Mamun Gavoya, does it belong to you? No. Are you allowed to eat it? Yes. So according to Rebbe Meir, that's a problem. Because if you hold that it has to be your money, it has to have a din mamin, well, guess what? Ma'aser Sheni, according to Rabbi Meir, does not. Well, then our mission doesn't work according to that opinion. It's just not that opinion. But if you hold that the problem of an esrig is that you have to be able to eat it, and even if it doesn't have a din mamin, that's fine. Oh, so then that's the opinion of our mission according to everybody. Because even according to Rabbi Meir, it's mamon gavoya, so it doesn't have a din mamon, but who cares? You just have to be able to eat it. So even according to Rabbi Meir, then, this mission wouldn't be even according to Rabbi Meir. So, what does it depend on? It depends on what you think about din mamon. Everyone agrees, esrik has to be edible. Okay? But does it also have to be a din mamon? If you hold, meaning it has to be like your property, yours, as a status of money, it's property, you can own it. So if you hold that that's not necessary, so then this mission is according to everyone, even Rabbi Meir, because you can eat it, and that's all that matters. But if you hold that it has to be your property, lachem doesn't mean just you have to be able to eat it, it has to be totally a din mamin, so then this mission is not going to work according to everyone, because according to Rabbi Meir, it's not going to have a din mamin. So then it's not going to be according to Rabbi Meir, according to that approach. So it doesn't depend on Rabbi Meir or Chachamim, it depends on what your approach is to Esrik. What does lachem mean by the esrig? If lachem means just you have to be able to eat it, then the mishnah is according to everyone. But if your lachem by esrig means it has to have a din mamin, then this mishnah is not according to Rabbi Meir. That's why the Gemara says, Hamani, who is the author of this Mishnah? Rabbanan he. It's the Rabbanan, and the Gemara doesn't say this, but I'm adding, and not Rebbe Meir. Okay. Moving on to slightly different topics in the Mishnah. It says, also Chazazis. Chazazis is some kind of blister, some kind of mark that is on the skin, the rind of the Esrig. Amr Chista, there was a Rabbeinu Agadol Amara, Yamakim Yav Ezra. Remember this, I spoke about this a little bit before. Chista said, Rabbeinu Agadol said this, and Hashem should help him. Laishanu Elba Makim Echad. We said this, if you remember, about Hadassim. That Hadassim have the berries, and more berries than leaves. So we said the same thing over there. We're not talking about Hadassim anymore. Now we're talking about the Esrig, but the same exact phrase is being used as applying to the markings on the Esrig as we used for more berries than leaves. Loi Shanu, we didn't learn that it's a psul. In other words, it's only a psul el b'makim echad, when the chazazis, these blisters, these spots, are in one place. Avo b'shnayim v'shosh m'koymeis, kasher. But if they get spread out into different parts of the Esrig, so then it's still kosher.
This is what's called. When it says for one spot, though, is that saying the individual spot is larger than if it was to be spread out among two or three?
So the Lashon HaMishnah was, also chazazis al rubai. If it has a, sounds like a blister on most of the Esrig. So I think if we read the Mishnah, I don't know, we would have said, oh, there's one mark.
That's
and the mark covers most of the Esrig.
Versus two or three would be more spotted, like we'll see.
Yeah. Right. So we're saying now that according to Rabbeinu Gadol, according to Rav, that this psul is only when it's one place. But if that spot was spread out to a few different locations, it would still be kasher. Amar lei Rava. Adarabba. No. It's the opposite. Vishnai Vishlaisha Makaimais, if it's spread out two or three places on the Esrig, Havelikimar. It becomes like speckled, like a leopard, and that is a psul. That's not beautiful anymore. We saw that by the Hadassim as well. That if the berries are a different color than the leaves, so then it becomes all spotted and speckled. That's menumar, that's a psul. El yidmar ha-seifa idmar. If you're going to say this phrase of Rav, say it on the seifa. Al mi'utai kasher. If you have these markings, these spots, these chazazis, on the minority of the esrig, it's still kasher. On that, so that's a kula, on that we have a chumra. Right? The first approach was that Rav was actually giving a kula. And now, Rav is making a chumra. Amar Ruchis, the Zorbez Rabbeinu Agadol Amaroi, Rabbeinu Agadol, reference to Rav, said, Amakim Ezra, Hashem should help him, Leishanu Elab Amakim Echad. The kula, the leniency, that the Esrig is still kasher, is only when it's on a minority in one spot. But if it's two or three spots on the Esrig, even though it's not the majority of the Esrig, even though it's not the majority of the Esrig, that's speckled like a leopard and is puzzle. Amarava. Okay. This is going to really zero in on something that's very much halach l'maisa when you go looking for an Esrig. Amarava. If it's on the chaitam of the Esrig, Afil b'mashahu, even a tiniest speck, nami puzzle, it's also puzzle. So, until now we've been describing some sort of marking. What? Yeah, I'm going to describe it right now. It's a problem. It's a machlokes rishonim. It's actually definitely not. We'll get to it in 1 second. Until now we've been discussing markings, these chazazis, that's on most of the Esrig, or a minority of the Esrig. So if it's speckled in a few spots, so that's a problem. Now we're talking about something very small. You have a little black dot, and the little black dot is on what's called the chaysam of the Esrig, chaytama. What does that mean? So there are at least three opinions in Rishonim about this. Some say that it's on, if you can picture an Esrig, can you dub it to draw us an Esrig? The Esrig, if you remember, obviously come in different shapes, but most of them look something like this, and they have the ukats on the bottom, and then it begins to slant towards the top,
and then it hits the pitam and has a dot on top called the sheishanta.
That's a typical esrei.
So, chaytmai, the beginning of the slant here is Rashi's opinion. If it's anywhere around that line where it begins to slant, it's like a spot on the esrei where it begins to slant. That line, so to speak, where the slant begins, along that radius, that diameter, that's a problem. The Rush, and this is basically the way we paskin, says it's the entire slant. So it's basically that top of the esrei. From whatever, sometimes an esrei is going to slant a lot, so that's a huge point to work. But in a typical one, it's usually a little bit smaller. Most of the esrei usually is pretty fat, and then it begins to slant more towards the top. So according to the Rush, and basically the way we paskin, so that is where it's going to be a problem. Anywhere over here, not just the diameter around where it begins to slant, but that whole area. And there's one more shita in Rishonim, which is what we call the pitam, not the shashanta. But the pitam itself is the same color as the esrei. It's always like, you know, the greenish, yellowish, whatever. And it ends up in something, it gets woody, like higher up on the top. So that part that's still the same color as the esrei, that's what's called the chaytam, chaysmoy. Not the Shoshanta for sure, but that might also be included in Chaitmar. So that means to say that any black dots, any black spots there, even a small one, is a problem. So that's what people are always looking for on their Esrogim. You know, most of the Esrogim, they may have certain scarring on them or whatever. They're not the most gorgeous thing in the world, but that's not going to passel it. What will passel it is if it really does have some kind of blister, some kind of mark, a black dot, whether it's rotting or something. It has one of those types of things on that part where it begins to slant up. That's where things become problematic in Esrogim. So then the Gemara says, not la pitmasa, if the pitam is removed, that's a problem, right? That's a psul on the first day. If anyone here ever drops their esrei and your pitam breaks off, just remember, it's only possible the first day. So you're going to have to work that out. But from the second day, you know, and on, I mean, whatever we consider the second day, chuzlars, but from the third day, chalmayin, and on, it's really kasher. Natla mitmasai, turn Yitzchak ben Elazar, natla buchnasai. The buchan. What is that? So, Rashi writes, it's really just an explanation, and there are a few opinions in Rishonim what it means. Rashi basically goes with, it refers to the pitam, what we call the pitam. It's going to be debated what exactly is that going to be based on Chaitmai that we said a minute ago. But the bottom line is, it's just another way to describe the pitam so that everybody knows what it is.
I think Corin says it's the other one.
What?
I think Corin says it's the other one, not the pitam.
The Shoshanta?
Yeah.
Yeah, so there are... Yeah. I'll tell you like this, one second. Rashi, Rambam, and Ran all say that it refers to the Shoshanta and also the peg stem. Yeah. But, the big difference is that Rabbi Chanano and the Rif and the Ran, and Rabbi Yitzchak Alevi, the Rashi himself quotes over here, they have a different, that it actually refers to the bottom of the Esrig guts. That the piece of wood, whatever you want to call it, you know, the stem, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, the pitam, we all know the biology here. The esrei grows from the bottom.
This thing called the ukas is where you cut it off from the tree. The pitam is something else that's at the top.
That's not the way that it grows. So, in terms of the way that it grows, that stem, what happens if it falls off? So some say that the buchna is sort of ball type of protrusion that's at the bottom of the ukats, where it's attached to the tree.
But isn't that not the Shoshanta?
No, the Shushant is the top of the pitam.
Oh, I'm sorry. Then the ball part at the bottom.
Yeah, the ball part at the bottom is a part that connects the ukatz to the esrig. And as long as, even if the ukatz falls off, but that little ballish thing in majiggy that we're calling the buchna according to this, inside the esrig is still there, then we don't consider the esrig to be chaser because it's missing the ukatz. As long as this roundish, ballish thing called the buchna remains, then you're still good to go. But if that falls off, then that's also going to be a problem, just like a pitam. That would be the other way to learn the Gemara. Is the Gemara just using a different word for pitam, including the Shashanta maybe? Maybe that would be the Chiddush, includes the Shashanta. Or is the Gemara saying, oh, by the way, there's a similar idea at the bottom of the Esrig by the Ukatz, that if the Buchna falls out, you're in trouble. But as long as the Buchna remains, then your Esrig is still.
So I think that's what Korn was saying. I think Korn was referring to the bottom.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Let's just finish this because this mom is a little tiny section. We'll get to the top of the next Amud. So the Gemara says, Niklaf. Niklaf is like it's scraped off. The peel got scraped off. Amar Rava, Hai Esreg, the Aglid, Ka'ahina, Sunka, Sheira. This Esreg that is scraped off and it becomes colored like red, like a date, is Kasher. I don't know exactly how to picture that. Yeah, but does he talk about it?
Say what?
The Lashon of the Gemara is, the Rabbah says, an Esrig that is aglid ki ahina sumaka. Sumaka means red.
Yeah, they said the Esrig feels like red bait. Like
what does that mean?
I think with the red
bait, it started to rot.
Like the very outer layer of the skin. It would just be like the outermost layer.
But it's not. It's not red. Where's the red? Meaning after it gets exposed to the air for a while? What's red?
I don't think the red is important. I think the most important part is the fact that the skin itself that's peeled is a very thin layer. It's not like the entire skin. It's just like a small, thin layer of it is peeled off. But it's saying it's kosher, right? It's saying it's okay. So I think it's referring to only a very thin layer of the skin being peeled off.
So Rashi writes, Kahina Sumka, the last line on the page, it's like a red date. And even this esrig, after it was peeled, nepach la'adumumis, it turns to red. Like anything else that gets peeled or scraped off. So I think that's what it means. Like an apple, a pear, like they turn brown. We call it brown. So apparently that's considered reddish. So fine. So when it's peeled and it starts to look like one of these red dates, it's kasher. Kasher, but we're quoting the Mishnah that says if it gets niklaf, it's peeled off, it's basal. But didn't we learn in the Mishnah, niklaf, basal? Where it says, like kasha, habakula, habak miktasa. One is when it's all of it, and one is only when it's part of it. So which one's which? Very good. That's correct. So if you peel, it's a little bit counterintuitive. But if you peel the entire thing, so then that apparently is okay. But if it's a little part of your esrig that's scraped off, that's worse than the entire peel being removed. Which is, I don't know, maybe counterintuitive, maybe not. But as Yosef said, so if it's only missing a little bit, that's menumar. It's speckled. It's spotted. You know, it's not, what word did you use? Consistent is not the, what word did you use to describe it?
Words.
You're not uniform, right? It's not uniform, and
so
uniforms are beautiful.
Would tomorrow say if it had that
you would expect it is, but don't always assume that.